takes two wheels and no gasoline to keep yourself healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. You can take a ride up in Forest Park. You can ride with the light if you ride in the dark. You can ride from the mountain down to the beach. You can ride on a trail, you can ride in the street. You can ride through a puddle, you can ride in the rain. You can take it on a bus, you can take it on a train. Take a ride to the waterfront or down from the zoo. You can take a ride anywhere you want to. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. It doesn't matter if you're big or small. You can take a ride to work, you can ride to the mall. Just keep the sky.
And you're sorry, we're having technical problems again.
No worries.
Okay. So I put the video off.
Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars.
Went to a rally outside City Hall about there have been a lot of bicycle and pedestrian deaths lately. So kind of a rally to try to get the city to do more for safety. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Not nice that there's been so many accidents.
Yeah.
Nice that people are mobilizing.
Uh-huh. Okay, we're about to start. Hello and welcome to the Bike Show on KBOO Radio from Portland, Oregon. When the spirits are low, when the day appears dark, when work becomes monotonous, when hope hardly seems worth having, just mount a bicycle and go out for a spin down the road without thought on anything but the ride you are taking. Those words were written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes and an ardent cyclist. My name is Alon Robb, and normally I'm joined by co-host Nedra Deadweiler. Today we seem to be having some phone trouble, but Nedra, are you there? Hi. Okay, maybe a little later. So today's show, in the first half of the show, our guest is physicist Dr. Monica Dunford, currently a professor of physics at Heidelberg University. Dr. Dunford was one of the scientists that were involved in the discovery of the Higgs boson subatomic particle at the Large Hadron Collider near Geneva, Switzerland. In the second half of the show, our guest will be Amelia Neptune, director of the Bicycle Friendly America program of the League of American Bicyclists, an organization that was founded in 1880. We are glad that you, our listeners, are with us today and always appreciate hearing from you with comments or suggestions. And you could reach us at alonkrab, that's A-L-O-N-K-R-A-A-B, at gmail.com. Our engineer today is Ty Walker, and the show will be made available for future listening by Josh Hedrick and Chris Smith and archived at www.bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. Our first guest today is Dr. Monica Dunford, and I first became aware of her when watching the documentary Particle Fever, a film that focuses on six scientists involved with a Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland and the search for the Higgs boson particle, known by some as the God particle. Among the many pleasures of the film were the scenes when Dr. Dunford was seen zooming to work on her bicycle. Dr. Dunford is currently at Heidelberg University in Germany, and in addition to her scientific prowess, she is also a passionate long-distance cyclist, runner, and rower. Hello and good day, Dr. Dunford.
Hi, good day, and thanks so much for having me on the show. It's a real pleasure.
The honor is ours. So I often like to ask people about their early bicycle memories. What are some of yours? Were you always a cyclist?
Well, you know what? I grew up in California, and I grew up in a really small town. And cycling was essentially like walking. It was your main form of transportation. So early cycling memories to me are a banana seat bike. I remember getting it as a birthday present when I was about 8, and it was just, you know, I still remember how exciting it was. And, you know, it was the freedom to just go to your friend's house and, you know, drop your bike in the lawn and rush over to some other friend's house. And so to me, my early memories of biking are just that sense of freedom that now you didn't have to. You could go places. You didn't have to ask somebody that you could go somewhere. And that's really what cycling has always meant to me, and it still does.
Oh. And what drew you to physics and to your specific area of research and work?
Yeah, that's another sort of very random journey, a random but wonderful journey. So I actually had never any interest in physics in school. I thought it was very boring, to be honest. And I was at the university and I needed a summer job. And I was studying chemistry at the time. And one of my physics professors, as part of a chemistry program, was looking for people to work in the lab. And I was like, okay, I need the money. And I started working there, and I really got into the experimental, the assembly of detectors and testing these detectors, and I ended up switching to physics. But it was very much it was a very interesting journey to get there. I never identified with physics when I was younger, to be sure.
Mm. And how did you become involved with the work at the Large Hadron Collider? And why is it called large? Is there also a small Hadron Collider? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of it's certainly the biggest of its kind. So I think that's where it gets the large from. There have been, you know, you don't start out by building an accelerator of this size. You know, they start small and then they kind of get built up. And actually the Large Hadron Collider, what we call the LHC, is actually a series of many colliders, of which the big ring, the large ring, is sort of the end of it. So you start with a series of small accelerators and you bring things faster and faster and faster until they get injected into the big ring. What brought me here is also sort of timing. It took, you know, a good several decades to build the Large Hadron Collider, and it was about to turn on right at a point where I was looking for postdoc positions, and it was definitely the most exciting thing to be working on if you were in experimental particle physics. So again, it was a lot of luck. Life is a lot of luck in the end.
And if you could give us the Reader's Digest version or the Twitter version of the Higgs boson particle, what's so important about it? Why is it called the God particle? Is that just some hype?
Yeah, so we have, you know, probably some particles you're probably familiar with, like, for example, the atom. It's made up of protons and neutrons and electrons. And protons and neutrons themselves are not fundamental particles, what we call fundamental particles. They're actually made up of something smaller, which we call quarks. And one of the mysteries of this theory of particle physics that we have was, for many years, and for many decades, was how do these particles obtain their mass? So why is the electron mass is what it is, and why does the electron have mass? Why do protons have mass, et cetera? And the Higgs boson serves a very important role in particle physics because it is that boson and the mechanism, as what we call the Higgs mechanism, is
what gives the other particles mass. And this is where it gets this name, God particle, which physicists don't like. I'm going to be honest with you about that one. We don't like that term, but it plays a very special role because through this Higgs mechanism, these other particles have mass. And because these other particles have mass, we, you know, have the nice world that we live in, you know, with, you know, massive particles and atoms that bind and so forth. So it's a very special particle for the theory, and hence its kind of special name.
Why is it referred to as the glue that holds the universe together? Isn't every atom holding the universe together? Or is that, again, just some, you know, journalistic publicity hype?
Well, it is a special particle in a sense that, there's gravity, which holds the universe together, and gravity is sort of the odd man out when it comes to the fundamental forces of nature that we know about. So we know of four fundamental forces of nature. We have nuclear forces, for example, nuclear decay would be governed by the nuclear force. We have electromagnetic forces, so electricity and magnetism. We have gravity, and we also have what's called the weak force is the nuclear force. And we have also what's called the strong force, which is the force that holds the proton together and holds the neutron together. So our understanding of particle physics encompasses three of those forces. And the Higgs plays a very special role in how those, as I said, how the particles get mass, but how also those forces sort of interact with each other and how they all play together. So it's all very interconnected. It's hard to explain in a simple way, which is why I think that people sort of come up with words like the God particle, etc. But it's, I think of it as a very tightly interwoven tapestry, in the sense that everything needs each other and plays together with each other in terms of how all the particles interact and how they interact with the forces and with reference to each other. Now there's an odd man out to this whole thing, which is gravity, and at the moment we don't understand how gravity fits into that picture, to be honest. It's one of the mysteries that we're still trying to understand better, and trying to understand how gravity fits at a very microscopic level.
You are listening not to the physics show today, but the Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBOO studio in Portland, Oregon, and also available as a podcast at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. And we're talking with Dr. Monica Dunford, a scientist whose work centers on the Higgs boson particle. So in the film, the documentary, which is available at the local library here, and I highly recommend, I saw you riding your bike. So is cycling a good time for you to think of scientific questions or unwind, or how does that work for you?
I find cycling is so critical to all creative energy, to be honest, because I think a lot of creative energy involves, at least from my own thought process, involves just sort of disconnecting yourself from the problem and allowing the mind to be free to expand. And I think that kind of my daily cycle to and from work, for me, is just so critical, because in the way to work, it's kind of, you know, I'm getting my mind into the work mode. And on the way back, you're just kind of allowing it to be free and allowing it to process problems differently than when you're focused on them. I think sometimes, at least for me, when I focus too much on a problem, I can't see the solution. I can't see the creativity behind the solution. And so cycling is always, to me, that way to open up the creative energy. And physics is a lot of creative energy.
You are now in Switzerland, I believe, Geneva, but you also have a job in Heidelberg. It's a university town. The university was founded in 1386. So what is the city like as far as cycling and life?
It's definitely a college town from 1386. It definitely fits. So it's a great cycling town. You know, it's real. Heidelberg also has never really undergone a lot of fire or destruction. So the old town really has this medieval village style to it. It has many old buildings. With old buildings comes cobblestone, which is never a true friend for cyclists, but it's something you deal with. But it's a really nice, it's to me, it's how cities all should be. It's there's no, many streets are completely car free. It's kind of embedded, the city is embedded directly into surrounding hills and with forests. So you just are immediately mixed into nature when you want to be. And it just makes life so easy in the sense that, you know, if you need to stop off and get bread, you just park the bike, you go get bread. There's no finding a parking spot or anything like that. And it helps really, you run into people all the time. So it's really a nice, ideal city, but apart from the cobblestones, as you said, it would be the perfect biking city.
And do you ride around the city, in the countryside, or to other cities? Or?
Yeah, no, it's really beautiful there. So they, you know, Germany also kind of has a way of building in which they tend to concentrate their populations, so which can have its pros and cons in the sense that, you know, we don't have a very big garden, if at all. So if you're really into lots of fruit trees, like my parents had tons of fruit trees in their backyard, which was fantastic. That's unfortunately not something you can really do in a, say, typical German city, but its advantages are that there's a lot of space in between cities, and so you can go out into the fields and it's all bikeable. They have either gravel, packed gravel roads for the tractors, but it's all completely bikeable there and open to the public. So it really means that you can, you know, especially for my kids, you know, who are 5 and 7 and can both ride bikes, it means, you know, we can go for nice little journeys and picnics out just outside town.
And do you feel safe riding there? Would you say it's safer than in the U.S.? Or?
Well, definitely I'm in Geneva right now, and it's definitely even safer compared to, say, a city like Geneva, which is much more car-focused. I think what's nice there is, what's nice about the German towns is that they have, a little bit like in the Netherlands, they have just discovered that everybody's happier if the bikes are completely separated from the cars. And so the bikes usually have their own paths, of which are completely car free, and vice versa. The roads are therefore bike free, because you'll oftentimes have a parallel bike road right next to the main roads, and everybody's happier that way. You know, the cars are happier, the bikes are happier, and it gives you a lot of opportunity. As I said, I'm oftentimes biking with my children, which I wouldn't necessarily. You know, my 5-year-old, she's not a very linear biker. You know, she likes to swerve, and if you're on a completely separated road, you know, there's no cause of concern. But if you're, you know, on traffic or near traffic, I wouldn't feel comfortable. So it's a nice way to get people to be comfortable with biking, even at a very young age.
And in addition to being a cyclist, I read that you're also a long distance runner and rower. And I actually saw an article about you rowing with 4 others, something called the Tour de Le Mans across Lake Geneva. What are some of these adventures of yours, and how do you prepare to them physically, mentally? How do you maintain your focus and energy during these trials? Have there ever been times you felt like quitting in the middle of the lake, or what?
Yeah, the Tour de Lac Le Mans is the name of what we call Lake Geneva. It's to the people of Geneva, it's Lac Le Mans, and it was a 180 kilometer rowing race around the lake.
Oh my God! That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot. It took us 15 hours.
Oh wow!
But it's an interesting experience because. You know, it really, you really have to separate the mind, body, connection, because, you know, at some point when the body has just been rowing for 15 hours, you know, the mind is like, this is torture. You should stop.
Uh-huh.
And you sort of have to just teach the mind to be silent. So it's to me, it is a form of meditation. There's a certain repetitiveness to it. There's a certain Zen-like element to just the repetition, that the sound of the water, you know, hearing the blades go in, the way the splash that they make, you know, this very repetitive, I find it very meditative, assuming you can shut the mind off. And it helps to have teammates, to be honest. I mean, there were some, despite it all, there were some low moments, especially when it starts to get dark and you're still rowing. But, you know, that's what your teammates are there for, mm-hmm. to sort of push you through those low moments.
Hmm. And have you gone on long bicycle journeys, 15 hours on a bicycle, or no?
No, you know, I haven't. And not because I haven't wanted to, but only out of circumstance. I trained with some friends to do, we were going to do the Year of the Lake. We decided 1 year. So we rode the lake. We did a marathon along, for 40 kilometers along, 42 kilometers along the lake. And then we were going to bike the whole lake, which is, when you bike the lake, it's about 200 kilometers through the roads, the way it goes. But my friend got sick just a few days, came down with a horrible flu just a few days before we were actually going to do the bike. And we never rescheduled. So it's still on my bucket list.
And I also read that Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, a writer I like, a Swiss writer, is a favorite book of yours, and it's a book about a journey of self-discovery, search for happiness, also about time. I'm wondering, you know, how do you, with your knowledge of physics and the universe and infinity and gravity, how does that influence your beliefs and your day-to-day activities? And I hope that question is not too fuzzy. And
No, it makes perfect sense. You know, I've never felt contradicted mm-hmm. with science and elements of religion, to be honest, because they probe different questions and they probe in different ways. And, you know, I think stories like Siddhartha, I find, are very, I love that book. It's one of my favorite mm-hmm. books of all time. And it has a very interesting perspective on time, which is that essentially time is eternal. And to me, that always really resonates with physics actually a lot, because, you know, when we talk about physics, we oftentimes talk about it as sort of in a way of that the laws of physics are universal, that the laws of physics are eternal. Not that the laws of physics can't change with time. That's not what I'm saying, but it's that somehow the laws of physics are universal. And there's an element of connection to that. And when I read stories like Siddhartha, you know, and they're speaking about the Buddhist mentality of, or perception of time and so forth, I find that it frequently comes back to how physicists perceive the universe. And in a way that doesn't appear to be coincidence to me, that there's a certain, that no matter which point of reference that you're looking at, you sort of see the same thing. And Siddhartha uses, for example, the analogy of the river, the time is sitting at a point along a river, but the river is flowing at all points at a given time. That's a very similar concept to physics, actually, that no point of reference is unique.
And
I think there are many similarities.
And a fellow physicist and passionate cyclist you might have heard of, a guy named Albert Einstein, said, life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. And there's a well-known photo of him, often attached to that quote, where he's actually riding, leaning to the side, and you wonder, is he going to fall at any minute? We're talking with Dr. Monica Dunford, and we could probably talk for infinity, but our time is almost up. So I'd like to ask you finally, what's next for you? Where might we find you in 20, 30 years from now? And Lake Geneva, rowing across the ocean, what?
That's a good question. I don't know myself, but I definitely hope that it would certainly involve physical transport of some sort, like either a bike or my legs or something. And I'm sure it will be an adventure, because I just love to search out for new opportunities and explore the world from, you know, its taste, its touch, its feel, everything that nature has to offer is wonderful, I feel.
Amen. And I really enjoyed talking to you, and I thank you a lot. And if you're ever in Portland or Oregon, don't be a stranger, please. And you could swim across the ocean, you could row, you could bike, whatever, but it would be wonderful to meet you in person. So thank you very much, and all the best to you.
Yes, thanks to you. Yeah, same here. Thanks so much for having me on the show. It's such a wonderful program, and I hope everyone in Portland continues to just love cycling and enjoying the beautiful Portland area.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All the best. You're listening to The Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBO studio in Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming on kbo.fm. We've been speaking with Dr. Monica Dunford, leading physicist and passionate cyclist. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, Dr. Dunford, and insights, and much success with your scientific work, your life, and of course, cycling. In the second half of, we've had today, for some mysterious reason, some technical difficulties. I hope that co-host Nedra Deadweiler is on the line, and we'll be speaking with Amelia Neptune, director of the Bicycle Friendly America program of the League of American Bicyclists. So stay tuned. We'll take a short musical break and be back in a couple of minutes.
Takes two wheels and no gasoline to keep yourself healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Everybody.
All right, those technical difficulties have been resolved. Thank you, Ty, our engineer. Nedra, are you on the line? Nedra? Ah, we lost Nedra. Amelia, are you on the line? I'm sorry for the technical difficulties today. I usually run as smooth as a bicycle wheel, but today, for some reason, we'll try to get Nedra, co-host Nedra Deadweiler, and also our second guest, Amelia Neptune, who will talk about Bicycle Friendly America. In the meantime, while the engineer's trying to get them online, I'd like to say that before the show, I attended a rally downtown by City Hall. Several bicycle and environmental groups have been gathered there today to raise awareness about cycling in Portland and safety. And I see that Nedra's here. Nedra, are you on the line? Nedra, you on the line? Amelia, having trouble. I'm sorry. Well, I'll mention that before coming here today, I attended a rally outside City Hall. There have been, unfortunately and sadly, too many deaths. One death is too much, but since the beginning of the year, there have been at least 46 deaths of pedestrians, cyclists every week. Something has to be done. The rally today focused on steps, people speaking about what could be done, how to get the city, the police, the traffic bureau to take seriously the situation with cyclists and pedestrians being at risk. As somebody who rides regularly, I could testify that sometimes it's very dangerous. A woman ran a red light the other day when I was trying to cross a crosswalk and almost hit me. A lot of drivers, unfortunately, are driving with one hand on the wheel and another hand holding an electronic gadget. So hopefully enforcement, increased awareness will work, and we won't have so many deaths and injuries. Nedra, are you there?
I'm here, Alon.
Oh,
can you
hooray.
Hear me?
Hallelujah.
Okay.
I don't know what happened today. We were able to get Switzerland, but a city in the U.S., a fine city named Atlanta, is beyond us. So before we get Amelia on the line, I just wanted to ask how you're doing, and thank you for being so patient with all this phone madness. But how are you doing these days, Nedra?
I'm good.
Things are going well for you?
For the most part, everything is good. The fall is going to be busy, but I'm excited for it, ready for it.
Great. And the state of Georgia has had some natural disasters lately, hurricane floods and some unnatural disasters, like a former president and his gang facing trial and maybe conviction. How are the people of Georgia dealing with all this mayhem?
I think it's important. I think historian Robin D.G. Kelly said it great. The South is the vanguard, and people need to look at us that way. So we are the future,
uh-huh.
And if we can solve these issues, I think the rest of the U.S. will be just fine.
Amelia, are you on the line?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, great, and thank you for your patience. So, Nedra, take it from here.
Okay, great. Amelia, did you receive an introduction?
You know, I'm not sure. My call dropped right in the middle, so I don't
okay.
know.
Okay, well, I'm going to introduce you. Thanks for being here, Amelia. My name is Nedra. I'm speaking with Amelia Neptune. She is the director of the Bicycle Friendly America program at the League of Bicyclists located in D.C. That program includes bicycle-friendly community, bicycle-friendly business, and university. Before joining the League in December of 2013, Amelia was a campus bicycle coordinator at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, a silver-level bicycle-friendly university, where she experienced the BFU program from the campus perspective and credits the League's 2011 BFU feedback report for her career transition from campus sustainability specialist to campus bicycle coordinator. Amelia has a bachelor's degree from Pfizer College in Claremont, California, or Pfizer, I'm sorry, and a master's of science in environmental sciences and policies from Johns Hopkins University. Welcome to the show, Amelia.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to talking with you and hearing more about the Bike Friendly program. So you have the big role of making communities, businesses, and universities friendly to people who ride a bicycle, an interesting name, friendly, to not assume that everyone knows what the League is and its programs. Will you describe the League of American Bicyclists and the work it seeks to accomplish?
Sure, thanks. Yeah, so the League of American Bicyclists is a national nonprofit advocacy organization. We're a membership-based organization, meaning we represent the interests of bicyclists who join us as individual members. And we really believe that when more people ride bikes, life is better for everyone. So whether or not you're on a bike, if more people are on a bike, life is better for you too. And so we really want to make it easier and safer for more people to ride bikes, both for transportation and for recreation. And most importantly, we want to make sure that everybody who is riding bikes gets home safely every day. So we do that through a number of programs as a national organization. We've got a federal policy and advocacy arm where we're lobbying in Congress every day to represent the interests of bicyclists with things like federal transportation funding and safety standards. We try to help influence state and local policies that impact bicyclists and bicyclist safety. We provide tools for local advocates and statewide advocates who are doing this work on the ground in their communities all across the country. We have an education program that helps train and certify people to teach bike safety in their communities, both to children and adults, including bicyclists and drivers. And Nedra, I know you're one of our league cycling instructors. And then the program I run is the Bicycle Friendly America program, which, as you mentioned, works with communities, businesses, and universities to help those entities become more bicycle friendly through a number of different mechanisms that we'll talk about.
Yeah, that's a whole lot, because most people just get up and go for a bike ride or a training ride or something, but that is a whole list of things. So, yeah, I want to get into it. So I'm wondering, I'm interested in learning about how your progression from college up to the league and where you are now, whether or not you considered yourself to be a planner, and how did you find this path?
Yeah, so I'll start this story back when I was in college at Pitzer in Southern California. I was really lucky to be able to create my own major, and I created a major that used environmental studies and sociology to look at sort of consumerism and individualism and sort of what that means in a world where individual actions have huge collective impacts. And consumerism is a big one, but, driving and transportation is another really big category. So that was something I was already thinking about, but to be very honest, I did not own a bike. I did not ride a bike back then, but I did think a lot about transportation decisions. So when I graduated from college, I was looking to leave Southern California and, more importantly, to leave my car. I wanted to move somewhere where I could be car free after spending several years in, a suburb of LA where it felt really restrictive to, for anybody who didn't have a car, there were very limited ways to get around. So I was looking for a place I could live without a car. So DC really called to me because it's got a great transit system. It's very walkable. This was almost 20 years ago now, so it was pretty bikeable, not nearly as bikeable as it is now. But DC really appealed to me, both for that reason and career-wise. I was looking to sort of use my environmental background and find some line of work to help save the world, basically, as many people who moved to D.C. aspire to do. Early on in my time in D.C., I was working for an environmental nonprofit, living car-free, still didn't really bike that much, though, and I being sort of in my early 20s, was moving around a lot. Basically, every time my landlord was raising the rent in my apartment, we would move to a new apartment, my now husband, then boyfriend, and I. So we got to live in a lot of different neighborhoods and sort of experience lots of different transportation environments. And at some point during that path, I was getting my master's degree in environmental science and policy, and was taking a class on sustainable cities. And we just happened to move to this apartment that I thought was going to be really great from a transportation perspective because it was right on the metro line. We could literally see the metro stop from our bedroom window. But the land use in that area was completely residential, The nearest grocery store was like a mile and a half away. There were no sidewalks to walk there. I still wasn't really biking for transportation at this point. And that for me was a huge aha moment to be studying, you know, what it means to be a sustainable city and to have moved from one neighborhood where I could walk very short distance to the grocery store and basically all my other needs, to one where I thought it was going to be great, but the land use and the sort of planning of that area really made it so that we were the only ones in that area that didn't have a car, even though it was once again on the metro line. We were kind of the big weirdos for walking to the grocery store through, you know, kind of difficult transportation options, limited transportation options. So anyway, that was the moment where I sort of decided that city planning as a tool to influence people's individual decisions around transportation and how they live their lives was kind of a huge opportunity. So fast forward another couple of years, we moved to Illinois where my husband was going to law school, and I was really lucky to get a job at the university as the sustainability specialist. And my job initially included all kinds of things from battery recycling to composting in the dining halls to a little bit of bicycling. And at this point, I owned a bike and I had used it a little bit recreationally in D.C., but in Urbana, Illinois, it was great because we lived close enough to campus that I felt comfortable for the first time ever commuting by bike. And another sort of serendipitous moment there was right before I got hired for that job, the University of Illinois became a bronze level bicycle-friendly university through the League. That was probably the first time I had ever heard of the League of American Bicyclists. And about a month later, they got this feedback report saying, "You're bronze, here's how you move up to silver." And so my boss handed me that and said, "Here, Amelia, try to implement as much of this feedback as you can." And I was able to use that feedback report to make the case that the school should develop a bike plan and turn my job into basically a full-time campus bicycle coordinator and do all of these actions that the feedback report recommended. And so, like you said in my intro, I really do credit that feedback report for being able to make the case. And I found that I loved this work, and I got really involved in the local advocacy group. I joined the city's bicycle advisory committee. And so I just was all in on this line of work, because again, it was sort of this way to influence people's decisions about how they get around. So by the time my husband was graduating from law school, we were looking to move back to D.C., and this job at the League opened up to run the Bicycle Friendly University program and the Bicycle Friendly Business program. And I was so excited because I knew how powerful those programs could be. So I applied and I got it. And 10 years later, here I am.
Wow, that is a journey. And I'm wondering if, in those 10 years, I mean, we're still talking about land use and mm-hmm. how to be car free, rising rents, you know, types of transportation that had sidewalks or amenities and those that do not, and mm-hmm. some of the dangers of being in those communities. And I'm wondering, like, you did answer this, but I want to know if there's anything else, you know, that brings us all together. What is some of the aha moments of those experiences and or values that really mm-hmm. help you to do the work that you do today?
Yeah, I mean, being able to experience it personally, where, you know, one apartment, it was really easy to be car-free, and another apartment, I was tempted to, either move or buy a car. And having, you know, enough of those small experiences over time really can convert you. And then I'll also say during my time, since I started working at the League a decade ago, I've had two kids, and they're now ages 4. And we are a car-free family, which, to be honest, I recognize is a complete privilege to be able to be car-free as a family of 4. I know there are plenty of people and families that are car-free by not by choice, you know, whether it's economic or due to a disability or legal reasons that they're not able to drive. And for us, it is a choice, and I recognize that that's really a privilege that we're able to live in a neighborhood where we can walk to school or bike to the grocery store and all of those things. I'd say the aha moment related to that is safety. When you're riding with your small child or your baby on the back of a bike, you look at bike infrastructure really differently than you do when it's just you as maybe a young adult riding by yourself. And so I always, you know, encourage decision makers, ride with kids if you want to really see what your city feels like from the handlebars, and think about, you know, what safety looks like and what it should look like. That's a major aha moment for me personally, and I think for a lot of people who are trying to make it work as a form of transportation to be car-free or car-light.
Okay, thank you. Kind of going back into the work life, professional life, what does bike-friendly mean, and how does this program relate to the policy work and education? Like you said, I am an LCI, and I know that it has allowed me to contribute to my community and also help me to be a better cyclist, and it's a part of my work life. So I'm wondering, how does the Bike Friendly interacts with the policy work and education work that the league leads overall?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's all really intertwined. I think at the policy influences how much funding there is trickling down to communities to build things like bike infrastructure or implement programs like, you know, in-school bike education. If there's not funding in place for these things at the federal level, it's much, much harder to do it at the local level. So federal policy is really important, even though it feels far away and abstract and, you know, not sort of in people's face, it really does have a huge impact. So that's a big one. And then state policy is similar. I have a colleague who's currently working on work related to speed limits, and we've seen that local cities and towns in a lot of states have a hard time lowering their speed limit because of state laws that either prohibit or make it really difficult to lower state local speed limits below a certain number. So we know that, you know, roads at 20 miles per hour are much, much safer for everyone, people in the car, people outside of the car. But a city that can't lower their speed limits because of state laws preventing them to doesn't get to reap those safety benefits by making those changes. So that's just one example, but there's a lot where policy work has really big and real impacts on people's lives. And then the education work is similar. And I love your, you know, the way you describe it is you're able to have an impact in the community by being a league cycling instructor. And I think that's really true, being able to teach bike safety or lead rides with a little safety component at the beginning is a great way to sort of, you know, spread bike joy to communities and introduce more people to bike safety or to bike riding. And helping people feel safe and confident on a bike is a great way to get them to ride more often. Also, it's the reality that, you know, there are plenty of adults who never learned to ride a bike. So we need to offer learn to ride classes for adults, not just kids. And then I also think of bike safety as kind of a form of advocacy where you can hear from plenty of drivers who complain about, you know, the scofflaw cyclist who runs the stop sign and all of those things. And, I don't know, being sort of a safe and responsible user of the road is just a good way to, you know, sort of represent bicyclists well. So that's kind of how I think of it in my own riding. I don't impose that on anybody else. It's a nice way to think of the education work is, you know, riding safely is a good way to make bicycling look good to people who aren't biking. So it's just another way to think of it. But yeah, education work has so many opportunities to introduce people to biking and make biking more accessible and safer and more comfortable for more people is the main gist of it, I think.
Okay, thank you. So just a message break. We are listening to KBOO Radio. We are talking to Amelia Neptune at the League of American Bicyclists. I'm going to try to combine a few questions here because we're winding out of time. So the Bike Friendly program uses award levels for communities. There are 506 bicycle-friendly communities in the U.S. Portland is one of them. It's platinum. Where I'm at, Decatur is a silver level. What does the award levels mean, and how communities make that change? Improve their mm-hmm. award level, and also what happens if a community is like, our community is not X. What mm-hmm. like yeah. in Portland? You know, what does it mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So. Awards program is, like you said, there's award levels from bronze to platinum. There's also a diamond category that no community has earned yet. And there's also an honorable mention category and plenty of communities that do not get an award at all. So the first thing to know is it's not a participation trophy. In fact, 63% of our first-time applicants do not get any award. Only 37% of first-time applicants get bronze or higher on their first application. And then once you do get an award, you're required to renew every 4 years because we know it's not something that you just do once and then you're done. Communities really need to keep at it, keep their infrastructure updated, keep improving, keep offering the programming to introduce biking to people. So there are communities that have lost their designation or gone down in award levels over time, and we try to use that to encourage communities to keep up. We evaluate all communities on a rubric that we call the 5 E's. So that's engineering, education, encouragement, evaluation, and planning. And then just last year, we updated the 5th E to equity and accessibility. And I think a really important thing to know here is there's no one-size-fits-all of what it looks like to, you know, achieve bronze, silver, gold, platinum in these categories. But we use the 5 E's to sort of guide to say, okay, a bronze community is something that's doing something in all 5 E's and really excelling in at least 1 E. A silver community is doing something in all and excelling in 2 E's. But we've got communities that are, you know, 500 residents, 800 residents, tiny, tiny towns. We've also got suburbs, we've got counties, we've got big cities, metropolitan areas, we've got regions. So it's really important to be kind of flexible in a way that we can meet communities where they are and help them understand what from this criteria will make sense for them, what their own standards and goals should be, and how to move the needle so that they're improving sort of in the context of their own community. Because what you expect of a small town is not going to be the same of a big city or a suburb. So I hope that helps a little bit as a teaser.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Just the fact that it's different, types of places. There's not one typology, that this program is flexible and that it allows more people to have this experience in their life, everyday life. For our last question before I turn it back over to Alon, and I think you've mentioned throughout all of this is like reflections on how to improve where you are. And I'm just wondering if you can just leave one example of encouragement of ways that people can increase bicycle friendliness in their community.
Yeah, so I would say if you're not already involved with your local advocacy organization, that's my number one thing. And if there isn't a bicycle advocacy organization in your community, find the groups that are active or, you know, the potential allies who would be interested in this work. And we've got a map, bikeleague.org/map, that where people can go find their local bike clubs or advocacy organizations or LCIs and events that are happening. And that's a great way to connect and sort of build that community to support each other in advocating together, because having, you know, a bigger collective voice is a really important tool to be able to influence your community and demand the change that you want to see there.
Awesome. I love it. Be the change. Thank you, Amelia, so much for being here. It's great to catch up with you, and all the best with you as you continue doing your great work.
Thank you. And thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. Back to you, Alon, and thanks for keeping us on track today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Nedra, and thank you, Amelia Neptune. You're listening to The Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBO studio in Portland, Oregon. All our shows are available as podcasts on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. Our last guest today, Amelia Neptune, who's of the League of American Bicyclists and is in charge of their Bicycle Friendly America program mentioned getting involved, and I highly recommend those of us who live in Portland are fortunate to have some wonderful resources like the Bike Portland publication, online publication that is a wonderful source of information, and groups like Bike Loud that are very involved with trying to make riding safer and more available and expand cycling. The city has a bicycle plan that was created in 2010 and envisioned that by 2030, at least 25% of all transport rides would be by bicycle. Unfortunately, we're falling way, way behind. So please get involved. And also, every Wednesday, there's a wonderful social event gathering at brewery on a few streets are closed around 27th and Southeast Ankeny, and it's every Wednesday around 3 to 5. I hope I could see you there. But do get involved, please. I'd like, our time is winding up here, so I'd like to thank our guest again, Dr. Monica Dunford, who is a leading physicist involved with research and discovery of the Higgs boson particle, Amelia Neptune, who's in charge of the Bicycle Friendly America program at the League of American Bicyclists. Also like to thank co-host Nedra Deadweiler, our engineer Ty Walker, and thank you, Ty, for persisting through some unforeseen difficulties with the phones. Also Chris Smith and Josh Hedrick. And I'd also like to send, since I mentioned we talked a lot about that little particle, the Higgs boson particle, I would like to send warm regards to a little four-legged marvel named Higgs, who's human. Sarah Stout is actually one of the people who started this show, a wonderful friend and bicycle activist, and she named him in honor of that particle. So warm regards also to you, Sarah. And as always, a big thank you to you, our listeners. We appreciate your support, your comments, your suggestions, and also spreading the word about the show. So all the best in the coming months. Safe and joyful rides.
Healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11:59 a.m.